Blog Talk Radio.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Report from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Hello, and welcome to Provocative Thoughts, intimately known as PT, striving to awaken those who are asleep. Stimulate those who are awakened, feed those who are starving, and nurture those who seek to know. I am your host, Carlton Steve, a self-proclaimed student of life in the search, discovery, and revelation of life on life's terms. First, I'd like to thank WeTalk Productions for allowing me to host this show. I'd also like to thank the creator for allowing me to be. You can contact the show by dialing 909-265-9215. Please press the number 1 to speak. You can contact the show by dialing 909-265-9215. Please press the number 1 to speak. You can reach us on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com. Go to search and type in We Talk Productions and listen to the show live. You can also contact us on Facebook at Provocative Thought PT Community Organization. Tonight's topic, Christopher Columbus. The story states, in 1492, Christopher Columbus sailed west over the edge of the earth en route to India and stumbled upon or discovered America. Columbus Day is celebrated on the second day of October. There are about 54 countries, districts, cities, incorporated towns, boroughs, villages, etc., named after Christopher Columbus. Places like Columbus, Ohio, and the District of Columbia. Was Columbus a great explorer? Did he discover America? Was he a monster, a plague among the indigenous people he encountered? Are we celebrating the wanton destruction of a civilization? From Global Research, from Garaki Chingu, in 2015, Mr. Chingu says, the great ancient civilizations of Egypt and West Africa traveled to the Americas, contributing immensely to early American civilization by importing the art of pyramid building, political systems and religious practices, as well as mathematics, writing, and a sophisticated calendar. Columbus suggested that black Africans preceded him to the New World in his journal of the second voyage. Columbus wrote that when he reached Haiti, then labeled Espanola, the native people told him that black-skinned people had come from the south and southwest in ships trading in gold-tipped metal spears. Africans from Guyana. One of the first documented instances of African sailing and settling in the Americas were black Egyptians, led by King Ramses III during the 19th dynasty in 1292 BC. In fact, 445 BC, the Greek historian Herodotus wrote of the ancient Egyptian pharaoh's great seafaring and navigational skills. Further concrete evidence noted by Dr. Imhotep and largely ignored by Euro-eccentric archaeologists includes Egyptian artifacts found across North America from the, I hope I'm saying this right, Algonquin writings of the East Coast to the artifacts and Egyptian place names in the Grand Canyon. That's the North America, y'all. So, 1311 AD, another major wave of African exploration to the New World was led by King Abubakari II, the ruler of the 14th century Mali Empire, which was larger than the Holy Roman Empire. The king sent out 200 ships of men and 200 ships of trade material, crops, animals, cloth, so forth. African knowledge of astronomy, religion, and just a whole lot of stuff he sent over here. So let me get a little closer from the history stories by Christopher Klein in 2013. Nearly 500 years before the birth of Christopher Columbus, a band of European sailors left their homeland behind in search of a new world. Viking feet may have been the first European ones ever to have touched North American soil. So that would be Leif Erikson, the Viking sailor. With all this being said, how can you discover something that is not lost, hidden, or hiding? How can you discover something that simply is, was, and will be long before you assume to discover it? Why was this concept taught in American schools? From Indian County Today, just a few things about Christopher Columbus. This is Mr. Vincent Schilling in 2017. He says, first, Columbus never landed on American soil. On the second, Columbus Day was conceived by the Knights of Columbus, a Catholic fraternal organization in the 1930s because they wanted a Catholic hero. After President Franklin D. Roosevelt signed the day into law as a federal holiday in 1937. The rest has been history. The Knights of Columbus is an international Roman Catholic Federation fraternal benefit society. They began lobbying state legislators to declare October the 12th a holiday. They succeeded in getting Colorado to agree on April 1st, 1907, with the help of the Italian immigrant Angelo Noce, who arrived in Denver around 1872. Lobby means to seek influence from a politician or a public official on a particular issue. So here we have how we actually got Columbus Day. We have some guys, Knights of the Columbus, lobbying to have Columbus Day and stated as a national holiday, the Knights of Columbus. Because they wanted a hero. That's interesting because, you know, there's a lot of Catholicism has a long history of its own. And they didn't have any heroes that they could select outside of Christopher Columbus. So, the New York declared Columbus Day a holiday in 1909, and the first Columbus Day parade was held there on October the 12th of that year, according to NPR. By 1912, a total of 14 states were celebrating Columbus Day. I mean, that's a day off of work, so I guess that's pretty attractive to a lot of folks. Whether you believe Christopher Columbus was discovered America or not, you probably not going to not go to work if somebody tell you, I'm going to pay you not to come to work on this day. I understand that. Pope Paul referred to the order as a strong right arm of the church for their support for the church and local community, as well as their philanthropic efforts. In 2015, the order gave over $175 million directed to charity and performed over 73.5 million man hours of voluntary service. That's how they keep track of that. They donated more than 413,000 U.S. pints of blood. That's a lot of blood. The Knights insurance program has more than 2 million insurance contracts, totaling more than $100 billion of life insurance in force. This is backed by $21 billion in assets as of 2014. Within the United States, on the national and state level, the order is active in the political arena, lobbying, again, for laws and positions that uphold the Catholic Church position on public policy and social issues. See the connection between the word lobby, laws, and then you see what there's the word million and billion being associated with that whole situation. Just in case you guys not getting that. Somebody might not be getting it. I don't know, but pay attention to that. On the way, Christopher Columbus stole the sailor's reward, Schilling is saying. After obtaining funding for his expedition to reach Asia from the seizure of and sale of properties from Spanish Jews and Muslims by order of the King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella, Columbus headed out to explore the New World with money and ships. Columbus offered a reward of 10,000 maravedis, or about $540 a sailor's yearly salary for the first person to discover such land. Though another sailor saw the land in October 1492, Columbus retracted the reward he had previously offered because he claimed he had seen a dim light in the west. So Columbus going back on his word. That ain't nothing, right? A lot of people go back on their word, right? Some might say that. Okay. No big deal. He went back on his word. Didn't want to give up the $540. That don't make him a monster. And you know what? It probably don't. Columbus never landed on American soil. Not in 1492. Not ever. We're not talking about Leif Erikson, Viking explorer. We mean Columbus didn't land on the higher 48 ever. Columbus quite literally landed in what is now known as the Bahamas and later Hispaniola, present-day Haiti and the Dominican Republic. Upon arrival, Columbus and his expedition of weapon-laden Spaniards met the Awoks, Tianos, and the Lusianes, all friendly, according to Columbus' writing. Soon after arriving, Columbus wrecked the Santa Maria, and the Awoks worked for hours to save the crew and cargo. I want to say that part again. Soon after arriving, Columbus wrecked the Santa Maria, and the Arawaks worked for hours to save the crew and cargo. The Arawaks worked for hours to save the crew and cargo soon after they arrived and wrecked the Santa Maria. They crashed the boat. So, impressed with the friendliness of the native people, Columbus seized control of the land in the name of Spain. He also helped himself to some locals. In his journal, he wrote, "As soon as I arrived in the Indies, on the first island which I found, I took some of the natives by force in order that they might learn and might give me information of whatever there is in these parts." He want to know what's going on over what what they got down here. I came a long way looking for riches. Well, so he took them by force, kidnapped. Because you can't say you're kidnapping people. It's Columbus the kidnapper now. By his own words, Columbus painted a horrible picture of the peaceful natives. When Columbus first saw the native Arawaks that came to greet him and his crew, he spoke with a peaceful and admiring tone. They brought us parrots and balls of cotton and spears and many other things. They willingly traded everything they owned. They were well built with good bodies and handsome features. They do not bear arms and do not know them, for I showed them a sword. They took it by the edge and cut themselves out of ignorance. They have no iron. Their spears are made of cane. They would make fine service. With 50 men, we could subjugate them all and make them do whatever we want. That's Christopher Columbus, y'all. Is he looking a little darker than anybody so far? After several months in the Caribbean, on July 13, 1493, that's about 1 year or so after 1492, two natives were murdered during trading. Columbus, who had otherwise described the natives as gentle people, wrote, "They are evil, and I believe they are from the island, the Caribbean, and that they eat men." He also described them as savage cannibals with dog-like noses that drink the blood of their victims. All right, so now Columbus is demonizing the people that he is about to do something bad to. So you got to make them evil before you start treating them real bad. Columbus' men were rapists and murderers. On Columbus' first trip to the Caribbean, he later returned to Spain and left behind 39 men who went ahead and helped themselves to native women. Upon his return, the men were all dead, with 1,200 more soldiers at his disposal. Rape and pillaging became rampant as well as tolerated by Columbus. Okay. This is supported by a reported close friend of Columbus, Michel de Ciuno, who wrote the first disturbing account of a relation between himself and a native female gift given to him by Columbus. So apparently, while I was in the boat, I captured a very beautiful Carib woman whom the said Lord Admiral gave to me, and with whom, having taken her into my cabin, she being naked according to their custom, I conceived desire to take pleasure. I wanted to put my desire into execution, but she did not want it and treated me with the fingernail in such a manner that I wished I had never begun. But seeing that, oh, to tell you the end of it all, I took a rope and thrashed her well, for which she raised such unheard of screams that you would not have believed your ears. Finally, we came to an agreement in such a manner that I can tell you that she seemed to have been brought up in a school of a harlot. Now, is that not madness? You're going to beat somebody halfway to death, and when they concede, you're going to call them a whore because you forced them to have sex with you. That's the kind of people you're dealing with right here. So, anyway, several accounts of cruelty and murder include Spaniards testing the sharpness of their blades on native people by cutting them in half. Can you imagine that? I want to see how sharp my blade is. Instead of cutting into a tree branch, they cut a man in half. Or a woman, who knows? I don't even know what the gender was. They cut a person in half, beheading them in contests and throwing natives into vats of boiling soup. So who's eating the people? If you put a man into a vat of boiling soup, soup is something you about to eat. So you just added some native meat into your food. So Columbus tried to say that the natives were eating people. This sounds like Spaniards are eating people. I don't know. I wasn't there. Anyway, there are also accounts of suckling infants being lifted from their mother's breast only to be dashed headfirst into large rocks. So what manner of cruelty and madness is this Columbus had brought to these very friendly people who, upon the wreckage of the, what is it, Santa Maria, they rushed out to help Columbus and his crew, and him himself say they traded anything that they had with the yard. Sailors of Columbus and his crew. So they're just like trading with the devil. So Bartolomé de las Casas, a former slave owner who became Bishop of Chiapas, described these exploits. Such inhumanities and barbarism were committed in my sight as no age can peril, he wrote. My eyes have seen these acts so foreign to human nature that now I tremble as I write. So he just saw some horrifying stuff. That's like the movies, the slasher movies we've seen. Basically, these guys sound like, you know, they just slashing people for fun. Christopher Columbus enslaved the native people for gold. Because Columbus reported a lot of natives for slaves, rivers of gold, and fertile pastures to Queen Isabella and King Ferdinand, Columbus was given 17 ships and more than 1,200 men on his next expedition. However, Columbus did not deliver. In the next few years, Columbus was desperate to fulfill those promises. Hundreds of native slaves died on their way back to Spain, and gold was not as bountiful as expected. So Columbus is getting a little desperate now. So he presented the Native Americans to Queen Isabella. Columbus forced the natives to work in gold mines until exhausted. Those who opposed were beheaded or had their eyes cut off, their ears cut off. This is madness. In the province of Sicao, all persons over 14 had to supply at least a thimble of gold dust every 3 months and were given copper necklaces as proof of their compliance. Those who did not fulfill their obligation had their hands cut off. Now tell me, kind of, that's, I don't even understand that. You want people to work for you, but you cut their hands off. You're cutting their hands off of people because they're not producing gold. I don't understand that. That doesn't even make sense. That's like cutting a leg off your horse because he didn't work as hard that day. So, which were tied around their necks while they bled to death. So they tied the hands around the people's, cut the hands off, tied it around their necks while they bled to death. Some 10,000 died handless. That's 10,000 people. They just cut their hands off, put it around their neck. In 2 years' time, approximately 250,000 Indians on Haiti were dead. Many deaths included mass suicides or intentional poisons or mothers killing their babies to avoid persecution. These are the friendly people that they ran into. According to Columbus, in a few years before his death, gold is the most precious of all commodities. Gold constitutes treasure, and he who possesses it has all the needs in the world, as also the means of rescuing souls from purgatory and restoring them to the enjoyment of paradise. But if this thing seems to be working in reverse, he came to paradise and turned it into purgatory for the sake of gold. Columbus provided native sex slaves to his men. In addition to putting the natives to work as slaves in his gold mines, Columbus also sold sex slaves to his men. And we just had a show on human trafficking. So Columbus is a human trafficker. Some as young as 9. He's a pedophile. Columbus and his men also raided villages for sex and sport. You raid villages? You rape and pillage, murder, mutilate for sport and sex? That okay. Now, did the Knights of Columbus know this? Or did they just turn a deaf ear to it? I don't understand. In the year 1500, Columbus wrote, 100 constellations are as easily obtained for a woman as for a farm. And it is very general that there be plenty of dealers who go about looking for girls. Those from 9 to 10 are now in demand. So there you have it. Christopher Columbus, human trafficker and pedophile. Columbus men use native people as dog food. In the early years of Columbus' conquest, there were butcher shops throughout the Caribbean where Indian bodies were sold as dog food. Wow, this is right out of those slasher movies, the people in the hills and all that kind of stuff. There was also a practice known as Monteria Inferno, the Inferno chase or manhunt, in which Indians were hunted by war dogs. It was a movie about, and it was a boy named Ice-T. Ice-T played a movie where these guys got him out in the wilderness and hunted him. There was another movie where they had all these different guys and they were hunting them, or where they make them kill, hunt each other anyway for fun. Just interesting, you know. Of course, that idea still kind of exists even today. These dogs also wore armor and had been fed human flesh, so they had a taste for some human beings. They were a fierce match for the Indians. Live babies were also fed to these war dogs as sport, sometimes in front of horrified parents. Y'all, this is almost making Hitler seem like a Boy Scout. I don't know. What do you think? Please press number 1 if you want to speak. Christopher Columbus returned to Spain in shackles, but was pardon. Not because he murdered people. Not because he was a pedophile. Not because he raided camps and cut off people's hands. After a multitude of complaints against Christopher Columbus and his mismanagement of the island of Hispaniola, a royal commissioner arrested Columbus in 1500 and brought him back to Spain in chains. There he was stripped of his governor title. He was pardoned by King Ferdinand, who then subsidized a fourth voyage. So that's like, let me see. What is that like? I don't think we had anything like that happen. Who goes out a fourth time murdering and raping people and mutilating people? Who goes out? Who gets sent out for a fourth time to do that? Anyway, I'm probably going to have nightmares tonight. Even if you were to overlook the not so minor fact that millions of people were already living in North America in 1492, the fact is Columbus never set foot on the shores. This is from biography. In fact, October 12th marked the day of his arrival to the Bahamas again. While he did reach the coast of what today is called Cuba, Haiti, and Dominican Republic, as well as explore the Central and South American coast, he never unfurled a Spanish flag in North America. So this guy goes on to say Leif Erikson, you know, was the first European to come. Probably, well, he at least came before Columbus. But his voyage was no less courageous. He may never have reached Asia as planned, but one cannot discount the sheer will required to make his journey. At the age of 41, he defied naysayers across Europe and led four voyages across the uncharted ocean in wooden sailing ships that were not designed to take on the punishing waters of the Atlantic. Whoopie-doo. Today, how many ships sail west to get to, from Europe to get to India? Now, that would be my question. The world already believed the world was round. That whole thing about sailing on the edge of off the edge of the earth, and that's a fallacy. I don't know if it, too many people remember that, but if you remember, it's supposed to have been like sailing over the edge of the earth. It was the earth was flat, and we'd sail over the edge. By 1492, most educated Europeans already believed the earth was round. In fact, it was an idea that had been established by ancient Greeks in the 5th century BC, contrary to popular myth. Now, I said previously that Herodotus talked about the Africans. That, I think it was Herodotus talked about Africans that had sailed to the Americas. It wasn't Americas back then, but way before, Columbus, way before Leif Erikson. It doesn't even matter who sailed here first from the east, because there's already a bunch of folks living here, so you're not going to discover. You can't walk in my house and say you discovered me. You can't do that. I mean, you can do that if you got the power, I guess, to take me over. You can write the books and, you can control things and say you did it. But as you see here, people are not falling for the Christopher Columbus discovered America thing. The question is, why was it taught in school? Why, and is it still being taught in school now that Christopher Columbus discovered America in 1492? Because that is a... What do you call that? That's a tragedy that would still be taught to people, that this man, who is an admitted murderer, human trafficker, and pedophile, sadist, discoverer, he's a great discoverer. He has struck a lucrative deal with the Spanish. Columbus stood to gain significant wealth and power from his voyage. Terms he negotiated with King Ferdinand and the Queen Isabella of Spain. His contract with the monarchs, called the Capitulations of Santa Fe named Columbus the admiral, viceroy, and governor of any land he discovered. How can they do that? How can some guy living in New Jersey send somebody to Philadelphia or vice versa and make that guy the ruler of the lands that he set foot on and there's already folks living in? Just that type of thinking alone is very dangerous. So I'm going to add King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella into this equation because it sounds like they're quite mad. They're telling Christopher Columbus, you know, giving him authority over lands they haven't even seen. But if Christopher Columbus sets foot on it, it's theirs. So it also stated that Columbus would keep 10% of any merchandise. Hence, if you don't give me some gold, right, I'm going to cut your hands off. So you don't want your hands, you don't want your hands cut off, you're going to work hard to get that gold. Only thing is, people dig for gold. They don't know where to go, and the people he's talking about definitely don't dig for gold like that. So whether 10% of any merchandise, whether pearls, precious stones, gold, silver, spices, or any other objects he had acquired within the new territory. Columbus may indeed have had noble intentions when he sailed west.
Huh?
You can't have noble intentions if you have a contract, right, that says you're going to be the admiral, viceroy, governor of any land you discover. That is not a noble intent, all right? Let's get that straight. So Columbus did not have noble intentions when he sailed west. And this guy tried to say, but his agreement with Spain suggests his intentions were far from selfless. I think that's a very selfless intention that you even agree to some garbage like that. You're going to be admiral, viceroy, and governor of any land he discovered. And there's a couple of 100,000 people, a couple of million people, already living there with their own system. Anyway, he enslaved and mutilated. We just talked about that, you know, what he did to the Tiano people, friendly group, who came out to help save the lives of the... Look, these guys ran out, saved the lives of the people who tortured, raped, mutilated, and murdered them. Now, that's sad. How come this movie was never made? So, Howard Zinn says the real Christopher Columbus, there was no heroic adventure, only bloodshed. Columbus Day should not be a celebration. What say you, listening audience? Should Columbus Day be a celebration? Should we scratch Columbus Day from the roster? That means you miss a day off from work, a paid day for some people. What do you think? I know Philadelphia schools were open on Columbus Day this year, and I know maybe last year too, after a long history of observing on Columbus Day. These schools were open. I don't know if they're open because of the reality of Columbus, Christopher Columbus's voyage west or not. Some people had the day off, and don't get it twisted. Somebody's willing to pay you not to work a particular day, pay for a holiday, you take that day. And don't take offense. You don't have to be observing Christopher Columbus to be off on Christopher Columbus Day and get paid. You just off that day, and you got paid because they say so. So if you do that, I understand it. Men and women, naked, tawny, and full of wonder, emerged from the villages onto the island's beaches and swam out to get a closer look at the strange big boat when Columbus and his sailors came ashore. Ain't that something? They brought them all kinds of stuff, as I just said previously. So, why did the Knights of Columbus feel that Christopher Columbus should be their hero? How? I'm trying to understand that, because these guys, the Knights of Columbus, do a lot of good things. I don't know what else they do, but according to some of the research, the Knights of Columbus are philanthropists. And they donate a lot of money and man hours to helping people. You know, what is that? $413,000 U.S. pints of blood in 2010. That's a lot. That's a blood drive. You know, $175 million directly to charity and performed over 73.5 million man hours. So a group of guys like this, why are they lobbying, right? Trying to earn political favor, influence the decision of politicians to make Christopher Columbus their hero and give him a hero's day. I'm trying to understand that thinking. Is it something else behind the Knights of Columbus that we don't know? You know, they have an insurance company, $100 billion of life insurance in force. Is backed by $21 billion in assets as of 2014. That's a lot of money, and that's a lot of lobbying power, because it appears that if you have a lot of money, you had a lot of power to lobby. Maybe that means a lot of power to pay people to lobby or to pay or influence politicians to see or support what you are seeing. I don't know. I'm just a guy on the radio sharing some information. So what do we got here? What are we looking at here? This whole idea of celebrating Christopher Columbus. I remember I was a kid, Christopher Columbus discovered America. I thought that, you know, because my teacher taught it to me. And nobody told me different. So what is going on here? I would like to know how you guys feel about Christopher Columbus now. I know it's not the biggest secret now as it used to be 20, 30 years ago. It's not as big a secret or even longer, because as a child, I never heard anybody say anything bad about Christopher Columbus. But I always heard that he didn't discover America because he never really landed in the Americas, and you can't discover something that is. How are you going to discover one of the continents or the earth? That doesn't make sense. What if somebody from another galaxy comes here, right? Steps foot on earth, and he's got the authority from whoever sent him to be viceroy, you know what I'm saying, governor and lord over earth. How would y'all feel about that? Because that's exactly what happened with Christopher Columbus coming to the Americas. How would you feel if somebody sent somebody here, you know, and from another planet, and he's out in the galaxies looking, saying, you know, and he runs into Earth and says, hey, I discovered Earth. And all of us have started doing all kinds of nonsense to us. How would y'all feel about that? Because that's exactly what Christopher Columbus did. That's exactly what King Ferdinand and Isabella gave him the authority to do, the authority which was backed by, of course, soldiers and swords at that time. I guess they didn't have machine guns at that time. Gun wasn't invented. I guess if they had machine guns, it probably would not be one Tiano or indigenous person left. Authority acting was his ability to exact violence upon the people, not in the words of Ferdinand and Isabella. That just gave those soldiers no pause to do whatever they wanted to do, because they were authorized by their king and queen, which we should take note that kings and queens don't always say the right things, or believe what is right, or do what is right, or support what is right or best for all people. These people were friendly people. They didn't deserve anything that they suffered. So just imagine somebody coming, you know, walking in your house or walking or coming to this planet saying, I'm running the show now. I want everybody outside, 6 in the morning, y'all get up in these holes and start digging till you drop. I know black people had a situation like that. And I'm not trying to talk over that. But what say you? The Spanish thought nothing of knifing Indians by tens and twelves and cutting slices of them off to test the sharpness of their blades. This is another guy saying this is But no, it's not just one person saying it's Howard Zinn. Says the Jacobin. The real Christopher Columbus. These guys are testing their swords out on flesh, on innocent flesh. In the year 1495, they went on a great slave raid, rounded up 1,500 Arawak men, women, and children, put them in pens guarded by Spaniards and dogs, then picked the 500 best specimens to load onto the ship. Of those 500, 200 died en route. That sound familiar? Too many of the slaves died in captivity, and so Columbus, desperate to pay back dividends to those who had invested, had to make good his promise to fill his ships with gold in the province of Sicayo on Haiti, where he and his men imagined huge gold fields to it. Crazy. How can you imagine huge gold fields to exist? That's delusional. They ordered all persons 14 years or older to collect a certain amount of gold every 3 months. We talked about that. You know, they cut the hands off, put them around the neck. The Indians had been given an impossible task. The only gold around was bits of dust garnered from the streams. So they fled, were hunted down with dogs, and were killed. When it became clear that there was no gold left, the Indians were taken as slave labor on a huge estate known later as Economidas. Economidas. Sounds like economy. Were worked at a ferocious pace and died by the thousands. By the year 1515, there were perhaps 15,000 Indians left. By 1550, there were 500. A report of the year 1650 shows none of the original Arawak or their descendants left on the island. They killed everybody, worked them to death. In the Economidas. These are the labor camps. The chief source, and on many matters, the only source of information about what happened on the islands after Columbus came, is Bartholomew de las Casas, who, as a young priest, participated in the conquest of Cuba. For a time, he owned a plantation on which Indian slaves worked, but he gave that up and became a vehement critic of Spanish cruelty. Las Casas transcribed Columbus' journal and in his 50s began a multi-volume history of the Indies. In his book, in book two of his history of the Indies, Las Casas who at first urged replacing Indians by black slaves, thinking they were stronger and would survive, but later relented when he saw the effects on blacks, tells about the treatment of the Indians by the Spaniards. After a while, Spaniards refused to walk any distance. They rolled the backs of the Indians if they were in a hurry. Y'all hear that? This is madness. On where we have a caller. This is crazy. They don't even make movies like this. Welcome to Provocative Thought. Hello.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Hey, yeah. How you doing?
This is Q. How you doing?
All right.
Man, that's unbelievable. I heard
this
he was bad, but I didn't know he was doing all that kind of stuff.
Man,
but,
I didn't know. This is crazy.
Yeah. I also think most people are ignorant of those facts right there that you're explaining tonight. I'm just curious. When did that holiday start? Christopher Columbus Day.
Christopher Columbus Day officially? Good old, what's his name, Franklin D. Didn't he authorize the banks also? Federal holiday, 1937 became a federal holiday. Franklin D. Roosevelt, is he the same one that authorized the banking system to take over?
I think that was Woodrow Wilson.
Oh, Woodrow, that's right, Woodrow Wilson, yeah, that's who it was, yeah. Well, two of them.
I'm assuming that, yeah, he didn't do his homework and he authorized that. And around that time, I guess the Italians were coming over here a lot, you know what I mean? And I guess they were trying to get their little piece of the pie and, it came about, that holiday, I guess. But,
Why did the Knights of Columbus want this guy to be celebrated? I don't know. That's the part that's baffling to me.
Right. I don't know.
What I'm saying. That's my question. What is the point in what is the Knights of Columbus thinking about? This is really cool. I know it's bad. I didn't know it was this bad. You don't want to walk. You're gonna ride on the back of an Indian.
Right. Well, Native Americans have always been complaining about that holiday. From what I recall.
Hey, you know what? Okay. Well, that's something. They apparently somebody's making a little bit more noise because I'm hearing more stuff about it. Now that I did, coming up, I ain't hear nothing about it. Because for Columbus discovered America, that was it. And you couldn't tell me nothing different. Oh, yeah, Christopher. But here we got Egyptians coming over here, and they're not killing up people. They helping them.
Right.
So, but this guy comes, and already on his mind, I'm going to subdue him. Because anytime somebody makes you viceroy, right? Lord over something, over people you have not seen, because you're not Lord over land. You know it's people over there, it's land. It's probably some folks over there.
Mm-hmm.
So he came with bad intentions.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this guy is something else. He's a murderer, rapist, human trafficker. You know what I'm saying? Serial killer, because cutting off people, doing all this crazy stuff. Not just him alone, him and his cohorts, his the soldiers, and that's just madness. I don't know. This is really terrible. This is really terrible. This is to the point that this priest turned against him.
Yeah.
And I wonder how much money he made before he turned.
Yeah, that was horrible. And you know what else is horrible about that? Like some of the people who support that. I'm sure that I'm sure some of them are going to say like, oh yeah, we shouldn't do that, right? But I'm sure it's going to be like a certain amount of them is going to be like, that's their guy and they're sticking to him. You know what I mean?
Hey,
you
know what?
Sway them, even with the facts.
Hey. That's their guy. See, maybe that's what the Knights of Columbus had in mind. But, I mean, with all this is, you're bringing people to the brink of extinction. You are murdering them. You're raping little girls, 9-year-old girls in demand. What do you mean? That's still got that kind of stuff going on now. with the human trafficking.
Right.
Same kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Beating people in submission, then calling them whores. What?
Yeah.
That's madness, man. I mean, you can't get any madder than that.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot get any madder than that. These are madmen. It's not just Christopher Columbus. It seems like everybody that came on the boat must have lost their mind when they came over here.
Yeah.
Because nobody
said, they came over here. Right. They came over here and they couldn't be stopped because they had the most powerful weapon. Other people, they had trees. They didn't have steel. So they were superior.
Right. And they had the aggressive mind. You know what I'm saying?
Say that again?
They had the aggressive mind. The aggressive mind. So these people didn't have aggressive minds. They came. They ran out trying to help Christopher Columbus.
Right.
They described them as people that they would trade the clothes off their back, anything they had. That, you know, they'd trade anything. Friendly. And all of a sudden now, he tried to make them monsters, but yet they're the ones that's throwing people, cutting people's bodies in half and throwing them in their suit. Because if you throw a body in your suit, what are you doing with that? We have another caller on of 5800. Welcome to Provocative Thought. Hello? 5800, did you want to say something? Because we only have like 2 minutes. Okay, I guess they just been listening. Okay, well, I'm sorry to bust anybody's bubble who felt that Christopher Columbus was a hero. Apparently, he's somebody's hero, but he doesn't deserve to be celebrated anywhere. You know what I'm saying? Like, based on this, I got through most of the things that I had to say. Some of it was a little repetitious, but Christopher Columbus does not deserve to be celebrated. You know, I appreciate the day off of work, and I want to thank everybody for calling in, listeners, you, everybody that's listening. Do your own research.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in 4 parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Report from 29 District. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Green Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry Hahn, woman liberationist, and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.